Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining the webinar today. Before we officially get started, I just want to do a quick poll to the audience to make sure everyone can hear us. So if you can find or locate the chat feature on that GoToWebinar dashboard and just message that you can hear us loud and clear, that would be great. You can also raise your hand if you'd like to. Awesome. Thank you, everyone, for sending that in. Perfect. All right. So if you are joining today, that means you're interested in Fulbright opportunities for the International Education Administrator Seminars. Today in particular, we're focusing on the seminars to India and Taiwan as they have the most upcoming deadlines looming in the future. With this webinar today, I'm joined by some great colleagues and alumni of the program. To start off, my name is Sarah Cosner. I'm an outreach and recruitment specialist here at IIE based in our Houston, Texas office. Today from IIE, I'm joined by Sophia Yang from our DC office. Sophia, did you want to do a quick introduction?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Sophia Yang, and I'm a program officer with the Fulbright U.S. Scholar and Student Program. And it's been a pleasure for me to be able to work on the scholar program specific to East Asia Pacific for the last 6 years, and I look forward to speaking with you all about the Taiwan IEA opportunity today.
And in addition to Sophia, we also have two alumni. Each went on either the Taiwan Award or the India Award in the past. On right now, we have Kim Pernice, who is the Assistant Director at Rutgers, and she was on the India IEA Award in 2017 and 2018. Kim, did you want to say hello real quick?
Hi, everybody. Happy to be here and talk about the great experience I had.
Wonderful. And we'll hear from her a little bit later on in this session specifically. But if you have any questions for Kim as you listen to us talk or to Kim talk, feel free to submit them in the questions box, and we'll get to those at the end. We will also be joined by a Taiwan alumni from 2018-2019 cohort, Christopher Quinlan. He will actually be joining us a little bit later in the session, so he won't introduce himself right now, but we will have him on in just a little bit. But he is coming from Brigham Young University. So before we dive into this presentation fully, I just want to have a couple housekeeping items. This session is being recorded, and as soon as we are done, we'll work to get that archived and online. And as long as you're registered, I'll make sure to send out that recording to you guys as soon as I have it. So in case you need to listen to it again or you want to rehear certain components, we will get that out to you along with some other helpful tools for you to craft your application. Additionally, as you guys already used that question and box in the system, please again feel free to just submit questions throughout this presentation, and we'll have some time at the very end to get to that. So without further ado, we're going to kick it off. So the Fulbright Scholar Program, we always want to do a quick highlight over kind of the background of the program and the mission. So the mission of the program is really to work in partnership with 160 countries worldwide. Fulbright opportunities really offer you a wide variety of things that you can do. So we have opportunities for faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, lawyers, and other professionals from all backgrounds to have the opportunity to teach and or conduct research overseas. One of the particular interesting things about this program is we do have these opportunities for these international education administrators to also participate on short-term grants. The mission of the program is really to foster mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world. As you saw on the previous slide and below in this corner, we do have a brand new logo that we're very excited about. And really what we're trying to get through with our new logo and our new brand is to really this idea that Fulbright is really here to connect people to people, people to nations. So really connecting people to each other is really at the heart of Fulbright. The Fulbright program was established in 1946. It is the flagship international education and cultural exchange program, and it is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State with funding provided by the U.S. government, and it is administered by the Institute of International Education. So we're very excited to continue our partnership with the Department of State. Moving along, another thing that's always at the forefront of our programs is really just highlighting diversity and inclusion, that we want that to be at the forefront of all of our programs. So we really look at diversity in the broadest sense. It also includes welcoming former veterans to the program, so former armed service men and women. We always encourage them to also apply to this program. So we just want to make sure that that, again, is at the forefront of our programs that we offer. So moving into the Fulbright IEA seminar offering, these Fulbright International Education Administrator seminars take place in 7 different countries. The seminars take place over the course of 2 weeks. However, what is new this year is in the case of the France Award, it's actually 1.5 weeks. So they did shorten it compared to the others. Each country, as you can see on this page, is really looking for a unique profile, and we'll discuss on this webinar specifically India and Taiwan's professional profile, what they're looking for, their deadline, everything in regards to those. If you are interested in any of the other awards, keep in mind you can only apply to one in a year, so every country on the screen, you have to choose one in this cycle to apply to. But we do have a general overview of all of these awards that's already archived on our website, and we will also offer a specific webinar for each of these countries as it gets closer to their deadlines. So for the whole of the Fulbright IEA seminars, they're intended to have broad personal and professional impact on grantees. So from this experience, your home campus will benefit from the increased knowledge of that host country's higher education system. It can aid in the development of programs, international student advising, and broader global collaboration. Additionally, grantees will broaden their network with possible partnerships and cooperation through the other Fulbright IEA grantees. So each of these awards, you're going to be with a cohort anywhere from 5 to 15 other administrators at the same time on those grants. So you really get that benefit of learning from their experiences as well and continuing on those relationships. And we'll hear a little bit more about that from Kim and Chris as we move forward. One thing to note is it is important for applicants to think of your application in relation to your university as well. This is not just a personal application, but is more broadly one that aims to increase institutional internationalization. So we just want you to know going into that that you're really looking not only for your personal development but also for how you can further your institution's development. So moving into the eligibility for the IEA program, first and foremost, similar to the other programs that we do offer, is you must be a U.S. citizen. Where it does differ is a PhD or a terminal degree is not required at all for any of these IEA awards. So you want to get that out of the way, is you do not have to have that PhD or terminal degree. Additionally, your appropriate professional experiences and accomplishments will vary award by award. So they do look at that. Some of the awards might be looking for the senior administrators, such as presidents and provosts, while others are open to more junior administrators for 3 years who might just be focusing on and working with international students or in study abroad. So it really does vary award by award, so we highly suggest that you take a look at that online, and again, we'll dive into that in a moment. Additionally, one of the questions that we get every year on these webinars is if that foreign language requirement is needed. All of these seminars are conducted in English, so you do not have to have a background in any of these countries' languages. So we want to make sure you are aware of that at the start of the application. So diving into the specific awards, I'll quickly go over India, and then I'll pass the reins over to Sophia, who will talk about Taiwan. So with India, there are 10 award opportunities for this program in particular. So they're looking for a cohort of 10. The Fulbright Nehru IEA program to India allows grantees to visit universities, government agencies, NGOs, and more in New Delhi and other major cities. It is a very rigorous program, so you are kept quite busy while you are in country, and as we work with the commissions, they always like us to emphasize that it is very rigorous, and you will do, I believe, about 2 site visits a day. However, the schedule will be disclosed to you guys once you are awarded and as you get closer to that departure date. Participants for this program in particular gain firsthand knowledge of a cross-section of Indian institutions, meet with high-ranking university administrators and public sector officials who play key roles in the planning and administration of higher education in India. The seminar aims to achieve a balance of topical discussions, knowledge sharing, experiential excursions, and exposure to societal and cultural facets of India. As you can see on this screen, they're looking for applicants with at least 5 years of experience as international education administrators, which is inclusive of foreign student advisors, study abroad advisors, and foreign student admissions. Or they are looking for senior level university administrators such as deans, vice presidents, provosts, and presidents. So they're really looking for a wide range of experience on this program. You must, as an applicant, be employed at a U.S. higher education institution in a strategic position of decision-making with substantial responsibility for enhancing the international dimensions of your institution, and ideally you're wishing to build capacity for your faculty and students by enhancing the study abroad experiences to non-traditional destinations, and also expanding opportunities for international collaboration through faculty exchanges, collaborative research projects, or the pursuit of innovative curricular design. One thing that the Commission notes on this award is applicants should not have prior professional connections to India, and they should come from host institutions that do not have established partnerships or affiliations with Indian institutions of higher learning. I know every time we talk about prior professional connections, what they're really looking at is kind of in the last 10 years, professional visits to India, not family visits or personal trips like that. So they're really looking at that realm of professional connections and visits. As you can see on the screen again, this is the first deadline that we have upcoming. So the deadline is August 1st of this year, and the award will actually take place in March of next year. So that's really a quick overview of the India program in particular. With that, I'm actually going to pass the reins over to Sophia, who will talk about Taiwan as well and their deadlines and what they're looking for in their applicants. Sophia?
Hi. Yes, so the Taiwan IEA program is the newest one to be added to our IEA seminar offering. We launched it in 2017. So this competition is only the third competition. It will be the third cohort for this award. So it's a really exciting and unique program that offers up to 12 grants a year. The underlying goal of this award is really to help increase the number of American students studying in Taiwan. So with that in mind, we are really the professional profile of this award is senior level administrators whose current role includes a substantial responsibility for enhancing international goals on their campus, or study abroad advisors with at least 3 years of experience. So if you are, for example, in international admissions or you work with students on international students, I would encourage you to instead look at the Japan or Korea program. This is really, you know, intended to increase the number of American students going to Taiwan for study abroad. The applicant, you definitely should be affiliated with a 2 or 4 year college. Ideally, you would not have had professional visits to Taiwan in the last 2 years. Just to note that this year, the deadline did change, so it is the September 16th deadline. It used to be with the August 1 deadline. And so with that, we also have changed the program date to April. It was in March before. So keep that in mind. The deadline of September 16th of this year with the two-week program beginning in April. And I just want to reiterate my colleague Sarah's point about this you know, the 2 weeks is very intensive. And so if there isn't a lot of, you know, room in the itinerary for personal visits. You know, so it's really not intended for anyone who needs to, you know, for student recruitment or any professional business meetings for your university, home university. You are welcome to do that before or after the two-week seminar program at, you know, at your expense. But please kindly note that, you know, they're really looking for grantees to be fully committed to the two-week program. And also to be open to be, you know, being asked to give public talks, possibly while on the seminar program. You know, someone who can speak to sort of the challenges that the administrators are facing in terms of, you know, encouraging students to study abroad more. So keeping that in mind, this is the professional profile that we are looking for in applicants to the Taiwan IEA program. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Sophia. And again, I see some questions coming in specifically about this program, and we'll get to those at the end. And so we'll have Sophia offer any additional advice in relation to the Taiwan profile as well. So with the next question and slide that we have is, how do I select the right award? And I apologize, it looks like there's some errors in how the slide came through on the screen. But some of the questions that we encourage you to ask yourself as you are looking for the award is really to think about how your campus has been working to internationalize itself. And some of the things that Sophia just mentioned before are very applicable. So as Sophia was saying, is if you're really looking to deal with more international students, you might want to look for a different award from Taiwan. As she was mentioning, Taiwan is really looking for institutions that are looking to send more American students to Taiwan. So those are some of the key questions that you want to ask yourself as you are looking for the right award, is which is the best fit for you and for your campus. So one of the questions we say is, does your institution have any plans to increase the cooperation with any of the IEA seminar countries? Are you really looking to enhance collaborations with Indiana universities and work on sending students there, work on partnerships, following models like that? So you really want to see, where do we see our institution going in the next 5-10 years? Additionally, are there institutional goals to increase the number of students from one of these countries? If that is one of your goals, that might also sway which award you might apply to. You'll also want to think about your professional experience. As I did mention before, most of these awards are really looking for applicants that have limited to no experience in that country, especially within that professional light. So you'll want that to also kind of play into how you are selecting your the country and the award you're going to apply to. And then lastly is really to look at what your professional profile is. As we can think back to the first slide that had all the different seminar offerings, some are obviously looking for more senior level administrators, such as the France program in particular, whereas other programs might look for a wide variety, which is the case for both India and Taiwan. But they really are geared to a different profile. Each one is geared to a different profile. So we definitely encourage you to really think about what each award is looking for. That way you are submitting a competitive application for the right award for you and the right award for your institution. Online, we try and give you guys as many resources as possible. So obviously we do have our website, as well as the catalog of awards. So everything that we have been presenting on today is listed in the catalog of awards, the overview, the eligibility, things like that. It talks about the award itself and what is provided. So the majority of these awards provide your travel, your accommodation, and majority of your meals. If you did choose to stay longer, again, that would be on your own cost. As well as online, we do have your application resources. So you can get to our online application through a system called Slate. So you'll register there to start a new application. It is a new system, so if you have applied in the past for one of these countries or a different country, your application materials will not be there. That's still in the old Embark application. So slate, again, this is the first year that we are using this application. It is very user-friendly. I guarantee that, so I hope you guys will all enjoy working with it. Additionally, we have opportunities for you to learn online. So you're attending a webinar now. We have recordings of past webinars listed online, as well as our Fulbright Scholar blog, which offers opportunities for you to hear from past applicants and recipients to these countries about their experience in country. But you're also going to hear firsthand from our two amazing alumni in just a few moments. But we just want to make sure that you have access to all of this. The last thing that I always like to highlight is this My Fulbright, which is listed under Connect. This is our email kind of campaign system. So we ask that you register your name, your email, and your interest in the IAA seminars, either in all of the countries or in the specific country you're interested in. That way, whenever we're getting ready to open future competitions or reminding people about the upcoming application deadline, you're in the system and we know that we can reach you and make sure that you have the most up-to-date information. This, I see we have some questions coming in about having access to this presentation. Again, this session is being recorded. We'll have it listed online, and this PowerPoint itself will be shared with you, so you can actually click all of these hyperlinks in this presentation. So just letting you guys know about that upfront. So you might be wondering, all right, I'm really interested in applying. What are the application components? So first and foremost, as I said, our application is entirely online through a system called Slate. That's where you'll register. You'll put in the award number you're applying to. You'll put in the country you're applying to and kind of all that biographical data. And then there are a few components that you have to upload to the system and some that you'll have to enter, say, for your references, name, and email, so the system can send them an email. So the statement of intent, which is one of the first components that everyone who is applying must do, is 3 to 5 pages. This is your opportunity to explain your specific strengths as a candidate to reviewers and potential hosts. It must be clear, concise, and compelling to audiences both inside and outside of your field. So it's really what you are looking to get out of this opportunity as well as your institution. How will this opportunity continue to impact your career trajectory as well as your institution's internationalization goals? There are some leading questions on the website that I encourage you to take a look at that kind of help you get a frame of mind as you're writing these statements. The next item that you have to upload a document is your CV or resume. This particular document can be up to 6 pages. One thing that I really enjoy about this new online system is the system will not let you upload a page count more than 6 pages. In the past, we've seen people upload 100-page resumes. It has happened, and it was able to go through successfully. So the system now is more intuitive. So if there is an error in your page count, it will let you know. And again, we'll follow up with you if there is an error as well. So for your CV, it should be clearly organized and tailored to show how your credentials, professional standing, and accomplishments relate to international education. It should include your employment history, listing all items chronologically, starting with the most recent. Next are your letters of references. All applications require 3 letters of recommendation. Recommenders evaluate your professional qualifications, the potential of your institutional impact, and your personal qualifications and qualities. So you might be wondering who can serve as a recommender. Your recommendations should be from a variety of people. One reference, and again, this is all listed online as well, but one reference must be from your current supervisor or someone you report to at your institution. Another reference should come from a colleague in your field, from either your own institution or another institution who is familiar with your administrative skills and your leadership success. And then the last reference can be from any colleague who can speak about your personal attributes and interest in international education. Where our reference is not allowed to come from, again, this is listed as well, but we do ask that representatives of the U.S. Embassy, posts, or Fulbright commissions in the country of application, representatives of the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the U.S. Department of State, and representatives of the Institute of International Education cannot serve as recommenders. So when you are in the application and you are trying to submit these recommenders in the system, you have to register them in the system, and you're responsible for ensuring that their letters are submitted via the online system by the application deadline. As a quick note, you do not have to wait for their letters to be submitted for you yourself to hit submit. You will have the ability after you hit submit to go in and check on the status of those letters and be able to remind them with that. So do not feel you have to wait to submit your application for your recommenders. Recommenders should submit their letters directly in the online system, and they may not be submitted outside the online system. The letters can be submitted, as I said before, after you submit your application, and they must be entirely in English. One pro tip that we like to offer to applicants is please provide your recommenders with a copy of your project statement. So that way they can use that to really build on their recommendation that they are submitting. So in addition to that, Sophia, is there anything I missed that you think would be
to jump in to reiterate the importance of really tailoring your application as a whole for this particular award, you know, that you end up choosing. So, for example, I know oftentimes applicants may focus on just writing that really perfect statement, but then their CV is just, you know, the CV that they use for other activities or, you know, other applications. So really think about tailoring not just, you know, one portion of your application, but the entire application, and really making sure that it really speaks to the award, the IEA award that you have ultimately selected. So that I would really encourage all of you to really think carefully about all the different components of the application.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Sophia. The last item that you guys will submit, especially for both of these awards, is an institutional statement. So all applicants are required to write this institutional statement, except for in the case of the Russia Community College Administrator Seminar. So that's why it's on this additional component, because it's not across the board. So the institutional statement should address the following. It should address general information about your home institution, the type of institution you're at, the total enrollment numbers, the number of degrees offered, things in kind of in that same vein. Additionally, it should address the number of international students on campus and where they're coming from. There are specific requirements if you're applying for Japan or Korea, and again, that's on our general webinar, and it will also be on the specific webinar for Japan and Korea. Your institutional statement should discuss the study abroad opportunities available on your campus, institutional partnerships, particularly at universities in the country where your grant is you're applying to take place with, as well as future goals and plans for internationalizing the campus. And as Sophia said, is all of these letters and documents really work together, so make sure that they kind of flow together for your application. And again, as I was mentioning, all of these items are listed on the website. They're broken down. They list the page numbers for what they're looking for. So please make sure to utilize the website. And I think I forgot to say, for this institutional statement, you have up to 2 pages to write this. The only other item that I know we get questions about is about spacing. Your application document should be single space, 12-point font, things like that. So feel free to, again, peruse the website for any other information that you might need. So moving forward, kind of building off of what Sophia was also saying and what we already talked about, We really just want to dive into that statement of intent a little bit further to make sure you have all the information you need. But really, as you can see, these are the leading questions that I was talking about that we encourage you to address in that application. Again, you have 3 to 5 pages for the statement of intent, I apologize, and you should discuss the following that is listed. So you should talk about your current job responsibilities and how they relate to the grant, the impact that your participation would have on your career, your professional development, your home institution, and your community as you are coming back from this award. You should really discuss on why you chose this country. Is there a specific impact to your campus or to your personal interests for why you maybe chose India or Taiwan, as well as how you intend to share what you have learned when you return to your home institution. Will you be working closely with students, encouraging them to study abroad and take advantage of opportunities either while they're at your school or once they graduate? Will you be encouraging other faculty members at your campus to take part in a Fulbright themselves? So just really think about how you intend to share what you have learned and build upon it. And then lastly is how the IE seminar would contribute to your international education goals at your institution. So how will you work with your particular office to further these goals? So again, these leading questions are all on the website. We encourage you to make sure that you do address them. I had a colleague who used to say, highlight each one of these a certain color, and then highlight in the in your statement of intent where you address it, and make sure you see all of the colors represented, that you don't see the first question addressed fully and then not enough on the other questions. Sophia, did you have anything else that you wanted to offer as part of your expertise with this?
No, I love the color suggestion. That's the first time I've heard of that one. No, I think, I would encourage everyone to, if you can, really start early in terms of building your application, you know, to give yourself time to think about it, to really stew over it, to go back to it, to share with other folks, you know, and let them have a chance to read your application and give you some feedback. Sometimes we find applications that really don't speak to the country and why they had chosen that particular award. And I think, you know, it's really, it really does help to strengthen an application when the applicant really shows that they've done some homework, some research, and really, you know, identify and tailor their application to the award specific details.
Feedback, that's always a really good one to promote. Thanks so much, Sophia. Definitely, I will underline that multiple times. Definitely seek feedback and advice on your application. All right. So moving forward is the specific timeline for both India and Taiwan. These are pulled from the website, so you can see the other awards there. But Sophia and I both went over this for the country-specific profile. But for India, again, that's the first deadline that is upcoming on August 1st. You'll be notified in November whether or not your application is recommended or not recommended. If it is recommended, it means your application then goes overseas for review and final selection. And then you will be notified in December for India if you are a finalist for the IEA to India program. And then that program, again, will take place in March 2020. And then moving down on the screen, Taiwan has the deadline of September 16th. That notification of whether or not they're recommended or not recommended to be reviewed in country will take place in January of 2020. You'll be notified of your finalist status in February to take place on your grant in April. And again, just want to highlight, you can only apply for one award in a cycle. So the cycle deadlines start with India and then they'll end next February with Germany and France. So again, you have to choose one of these IEAs in a cycle. And then the last piece that I have before we pass the reins over to Kim to talk about her experience is just highlighting the upcoming webinars that we have. As I said before, and I'll link these in the follow-up email, we've already conducted a general overview as well as the application walkthrough, which is a great resource for you as you're utilizing our new application system. As you can see on the screen, we do have other opportunities throughout the rest of this year. So if you have any colleagues either at your institution or other institutions that you think might be interested in these opportunities, please share them with them, and we'd be so delighted to have them on a webinar or answer any questions that they might have about these opportunities. So with that, it is my pleasure to introduce again Kim Pranice to talk about her experience on the Fulbright Nehru IEA in India. Kim?
Thank you. Hi, everybody. As I mentioned before, I'm excited to talk about this because this was one of the best professional experiences I've had thus far. And whenever I hear that anyone's considering applying for one of these IEA seminars, I'm always very encouraging because I think it's a unique model. There's nothing like it. There's no other way you would get this type of exposure and learn this much in this amount of time. So a little bit about who I am and what my motivation was to apply. I have been working, at the time of my application, I've been working at Rutgers in the international office for maybe between 5 and 6 years. So I was by no means a senior level administrator. My responsibilities include management of partnership agreements. So I work closely with faculty here. I have a good amount of direct interaction with our partner institutions. I'm also involved in hosting visiting delegations. So it was I was well suited for the India program because I could demonstrate that me learning more about the higher education system in India would I could bring that back to my work and apply it fairly easily. For those who maybe have some similar experience, the Indian higher education system can be very confusing, and I felt that it wasn't the kind of thing that I was easily grasping online or through talking to colleagues or visitors, and that I really felt I could benefit from being on the ground and seeing some of these places firsthand and talking to professionals there. So, it definitely did provide that. In terms of what our institutional goals were at that time, we were in the process, and still are actually, of trying to create a clear strategy with respect to our partners in India. We do send, Rutgers is a large public research institution, so we do have a number of students from India, similar to most other institutions. I think it's the third highest after China and Korea, South Korea. But we also had a few study abroad programs, but we weren't, and we knew that we had faculty that were engaged there, but we didn't have a good handle on like how to make the most of all of those links. So we felt that, India is a place that we wanted to be more strategic about. We wanted to, invest more resources, but we weren't quite clear on how to do that. So I was able to get the support of like senior leadership in our office, who were able to say, if she participates in this, it will benefit us in this way. So these were all things I stressed in my application. Just to reiterate some of the things that have been said already, in terms of completing the application, I spent a lot of time on it. I made sure I answered every question as thoroughly as I could. I really also like the idea about highlighting. I hadn't thought of that, but that's smart. I asked for feedback on my application. I knew of a couple of people who had engaged in programs, who had done other IEA programs, not in India, but other places, and I touched base with them and got some pointers from them. So it's definitely smart to do that, just to do the research and then also to, you know, get feedback, as has been said, and to spend a lot of time on your application. In terms of the program itself, we had 14 institutions, U.S. institutions represented when I participated in 2017, 2018. So it was March of 2018 that I participated. So it sounds like they're decreasing that number by four. In terms of who was involved, it was all levels of people, from myself up to provost. We had a couple, you know, assistant vice presidents, a couple, maybe one vice president, a lot of middle people, directors. So it was a good, we covered all ranges. Something that was unique to the, I don't know if it's unique, but something I really liked about our program was that we had an Indian professor with us for the entire 2 weeks. She's led other IEA seminars. I can't imagine what the experience would have been like without her, because she kind of ended up serving as a cultural translator, navigator for us. Although she was very careful about staying, it wasn't easy to figure out what she was thinking about different visits. But if we pressed her, she would give us some of her thoughts. But having her with us, rather than it just being 14 Americans, was invaluable. And there's also staff. There were staff in certain places. From the United States International or India Education Program, who are also working with us. So having those connections with people from India made a big difference. And I'd like to say that I'm sure all groups are different, but our group, we got along very well, and it's a great opportunity to make some really good connections with people from other institutions in the U.S. And recently, some of you on the call might have attended the NASA International Conference. For example, those of us who were on the trip together and went to NASA, we, you know, made a night to meet up and have dinner together. So we stayed in touch, and these programs do provide a great professional opportunity within the United States in terms of networking and meeting people and learning from each other. In terms of the summary of just a quick overview of what we did on the program, that map that's on the screen, we started in Delhi and then we went down to Coimbatore and Kochi. So we visited, or we were in Delhi for about 7 days, Coimbatore for about 4 days, Kochi about 4 days. We had maybe about 17 institution visits. Those were a combination of public and private, large and small, old and new. That's another great thing about the program, is that they build it in a way that you see a variety of institutions and you really get to compare and contrast. And then there were a number of cultural excursions as well. On the right of the screen, we're at the Isha Yoga Center, and in the middle at bottom, we were at a large mosque in New Delhi. We took a walking tour of Old Delhi, and we all visited the mosque, and the women had to cover our heads, which is why our heads are covered. So you got to see, we also went to the Taj Mahal, we got to see a Kathakali performance, we went to Humayun's tomb, we went on a backwater cruise. So it's intense in terms of institution visits, but also the cultural visits are also, there's a lot of those. Should I wrap up?
Sure.
I have another minute?
Yeah, you have a couple more minutes. Go ahead.
Okay, cool. I was hearing something, so I didn't know if I was, like, rambling. I would like to reiterate what's been said about the rigorous schedule. It is, for me personally, the most challenging part was was not so much just, well, I guess it was the schedule, but it was also that you're in proximity to your group members for those 2 weeks, close proximity. So if you can point to examples in your past where you have traveled with people internationally and put that on your application as well, I think that's another plus, because I don't think that's something that everybody would embrace, but if you have done it and if you can show that it's something that you can do and stay sane, ideally happy, not just sane, that it's probably a plus for your application. Because it's a rigorous schedule, and you're also, you know, you're all together for those 2 weeks. But I think that it was more than worth, you know, the occasional, oh, I wish I could be alone for 5 hours. I would say that what you get out of it it could be life-changing. And the program really did, in terms of what I learned, it really did help me to understand the structure of higher ed in India, and that was one of my big goals. I feel I have a much better understanding of all these different, for those who have looked into it, different categories of like a public and a private and a state and an autonomous or not autonomous or a deemed-to-be university. All of these things make sense to me now, whereas I had no idea before. And, you know, I can make a much more educated contribution in terms of assessing what an institution, what kind of match it might be for Rutgers, and even in terms of understanding like what they are capable of doing and not capable of doing based on what designation they have from the government. There's some that have a lot more freedom in terms of developing their curriculum than others, for example. So questions like that became, you know, they were answered and they became, I feel much more confident. And we also got to, the experience also taught us a lot about the challenges of education in India, scale, quality, cost are three big ones. And even though, like, I think it's explicitly stated that these IEA seminars are not set up to like find partners, it was still great to go to some of these institutions and see, you know, some of the great work they're doing. And we have, Rutgers, we have stayed in touch with one institution. We've already had like several faculty travel there, and they've visited us twice so far. And I am hopeful that something will come out of that. But that wasn't necessarily a goal of me doing the program initially. Overall, I would say it was an amazing experience. I think anybody who's considering India, if you feel you can, you know, answer the questions confidently and it really makes sense for your institution, I would strongly, strongly recommend that you give it a shot, because it was fantastic.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Kim. That was such great advice. Yeah, that was great, and we do have some questions coming in. But I do see that Chris has now joined us, so I want to quickly introduce Christopher Quinlan, who is coming from BYU, Brigham Young University, and participated in the IEA Taiwan program. And I want to say it was this past year. Is that correct, Chris?
That is correct.
Perfect. Well, Chris, want to take the reins?
Yes, I can echo a lot of what I've heard Kim say about the, you know, the experience itself, an incredible personal and professional opportunity for growth. I think we visited over the course of the 2 weeks about 21, we had about 21 campus visits, and we also had a meeting with a consortium of universities, so we met people from many more universities around Taiwan, and you know, it really gave us a lot of context for, you know, the higher education atmosphere in the country, gave us a sense for their challenges, for their aspirations, And, you know, like Kim mentioned, there, we have had one potential partnership come from that, a campus visit from one of the universities there. And certainly from all the presentations that were given to us over the course of those 2 weeks, any type of partnership that we wanted to follow up on was available for any sort of specialization with the universities, a lot of English-only programs. But mostly, you know, like Kim alluded to as well, you know, you have this intense experience, this intense time period in which you're able to take a pretty deep dive into the education culture of the country, but also into the culture itself and, you know, what people value about education and how that education parlays then into a professional atmosphere for a lot of people. And then, you know, we've been talking a lot about internationalization of the campus and seeing how that plays out with campuses in country. Certainly, as Kim said, it is, like I said, an intense experience where, you know, you're sharing a lot of time with your group of people. But for the most part, that was a very enriching part of the experience. And, you know, you're on a bus for an hour or two after a visit, and everyone starts processing the information that's just been shared, and we start exchanging best practices from one another's universities. And that was a really enriching part of the experience itself, too, was that communication between other universities, you know, finding out how other universities deal with those types of programs or, you know, what their best practices are in the field. Certainly that was a very valuable part of the program. And speaking to the application itself, you know, I think the program is really looking for a variety of people. We had people on my program who were on the incoming student side, on the education abroad side. We had senior international officers. We had deans. You know, everyone, of course, is involved in their own aspect of the international side of university affairs, but that, again, just gave a really, was really a rewarding part of that exchange, was between the administrators on the program.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Chris. And again, we have a few questions that are coming in that we may send either your way or Kim's way, but I want to quickly go into a few of these questions. On the screen, I put up the email to the IEA inbox, so feel free, any questions that we don't get to, please reach out there. And if you do have a specific question for either Chris or Kim, you can send them my way. I'd be more than happy to share it with them. And I do have some people that are thanking you guys for your expertise. One of the questions is, does administrative experience as an international education service provider count towards experience? Sophia, I may ask for you to chime in here as well. I believe some of the awards do allow for current international education nonprofit service providers to apply. Not every award allows for it. Sophia, in your experience, what has been kind of your stance on that?
I think it really depends on the award. So, for example, Taiwan is really looking for someone who is affiliated with 2 4-year institutions. So maybe a nonprofit, you know, organization is not the best fit for this particular award. But I believe I have seen someone who was a nonprofit, but, you know, very much in the international education field, apply for Japan in the past. So, again, you know, really looking at the award details and the various nuances for what they are looking for.
Yeah, and I would echo, I've seen it a lot with Germany because it has such a broad overview. Perfect. Thanks, Sophia. We do have a question specifically about Taiwan. Does the 3 years of experience specifically have to be within study abroad? I can let Sophia take that over if she would like.
I think the 3 years of experience needs to be certainly an international education. I can double check, and if you want to send us an email, I would be glad to follow up to just confirm this with the commission. But you know, it's generally 3 years of international education experience. But let me double check to see it has to be at least 3 years in that study abroad experience, study abroad position, excuse me. So do send me an email, and I'll follow up for you to confirm.
Perfect. The next question we have is really geared towards India, and actually, Kim, I'm going to have you also offer your advice. But the question is, are higher-level professionals prioritized over education abroad professionals? The short answer for me is no. I think India and most of the other countries are really looking for a broad spectrum of administrators. And Kim, I know you talked about other people who are on your cohort, but can you dive into that a little bit more as well?
Sure. I'm eyeballing the titles of my colleagues that were in the group, and I think out of the 14, I would say maybe 4 or 5, or maybe 4 to 7, because I'm not recalling exactly, but we're directly involved in different types of study abroad programs. So it was a strong presence in our group. And that was, you know, it could be a traditional study abroad office or, like, you know, the business schools. There's, you know, the people who coordinate they're sending their students abroad. So there were different types of environments.
Perfect. I did get a question, and Sophia, this will, I'm going to ask for your feedback as well, is feedback provided to applicants after the review? Unfortunately, we're not allowed to provide feedback that takes place in any of the review panels. However, if you did have specific questions and you're ready to apply in the future for another award, you could reach out to us and provide us your documents, and we'd be happy to take a look at them and suggest ways to make them stronger. Sophia, did you have anything else that you would like to offer about the feedback question?
No, you know what, it's true. We can't provide you feedback from the peer review process, unfortunately, but we do welcome anyone who is interested in reapplying to reach out to us and, you know, talk to us about ways we can strengthen your application.
Perfect. There is one question that came through about senior-level administrators and examples of relevant job titles, which I think Kim really talked about during her presentation. Chris, did you want to kind of highlight the different spectrums of the titles again that you've experienced with Taiwan?
Sure, of participants on the program, you mean?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, so we had a couple directors from International Student and Scholar Services. We had a few directors from Education Abroad offices or their equivalents on different campuses. We had a range of size, right, of universities. We had public, private, small, large. And so depending on the institution, you know, their equivalents of these positions were a little bit different. But, you know, we'd have some one-person shops, and we'd have some from very large institutions. But, there was a whole range of people. We even had one international advisor for programs. So I don't know about every job that you might see in ISSS or an EA office. Maybe not every job was represented, but certainly a range, which, again, was very enriching, right? To, you know, as far as getting a 360-degree view of campus internationalization, we had a lot of different perspectives there on the program and a lot of opportunities to share.
Perfect. Thank you, Chris. I did get a question about spouses and children participating, and you're right, this does come up every year. Unfortunately, on these grants, it does not really allow for you to bring dependents. It does not fund for that. However, if you did want to extend your trip after the 2 weeks, either before or after, the family could join that. We have seen that, but really for the duration of the grant, it is not really allowed in those cases because, again, you're experiencing very busy, full days, and they want to make sure that your attention is really focused on that group. We do have a question about, and I'm actually curious, Sophia, for your feedback on this, is we have someone who is a Dean of Engineering, a U.S. citizen of Indian origin. They don't have professional affiliations with Indian institutions, but the role that he has is really to grow graduate students from India. Do you see it as a disadvantage to apply for the IEA to India, especially with having that origin? I've not seen this come up. Have you with any of the programs you worked on?
You know, as long as the applicant meets the eligibility criteria, I think it's just a matter of how one really frames, you know, their background and to use it as, you know, as a benefit. And so I think the framing is really important, but by no means should that prevent anyone from applying if they are, you know, they meet all the eligibility criteria.
Perfect. Thanks for that insight. I was like, oh, I haven't seen this in a while. We do have a lot of questions coming through about the success rates and how many people, like what the percentage is. Unfortunately, we're not allowed to disclose application numbers or percentage of successful rates. We do apologize for that. I have one question about restrictions on participation from past IA seminar awardees. As long as you, there have been 2 years between your last award and this cycle, that is fine for you to apply. We have had some grantees receive more than one IEA, so again, you are welcome to apply. However, your application will be looked through within that lens. So you'll have to really show the competitiveness of your application and why a second IEA would be a benefit. But it has happened. I don't want to dissuade you. And then the last question before I think we have to wrap up, again, please email me all questions at IIE.org, and we'd be happy to either answer them or pass them on to the commissions directly to get their insight for some of those more nuanced cases. Is how many participants can apply from each institution, which I think is a great question. What I have always counseled is I would suggest if you do have other colleagues, you have a large department and other colleagues apply, I would suggest that they apply for a different IEA than the one you are applying to. And Sophia can add on if she would like. But if they do decide to apply for the same one that you're applying to, they are, in theory, your direct competition. And it is unlikely, I have not seen it, for the country to award more than one position to a university because they're trying to get a wide gambit of professional profiles as well as regional diversity of the institutions and institutional diversity. Sophia, did you have anything else about that?
No, I completely agree. I think it would be best if there are, you know, multiple interested applicants from the same institution to consider applying for different awards because, again, you know, looking at the diversity piece of the each cohort, so it's very rare, you know, for more than one person to be selected from the same institution.
Perfect. That's great. Well, again, we really thank you all for joining us today. I love to see all the questions that are just pouring in. This is great. Hopefully we can have advising sessions and speak over email. But again, I want to thank Kim and Chris just for taking time out of their day to really talk about their experiences on their programs, The information that you guys provide is just so invaluable, not only to us as staff at IIE, but also to the applicants. So thank you both for taking the time. It was so great to hear from you. And also, Sophia, thank you again for also taking the time to offer your experience working directly on the program.
Good luck, everyone.
Yeah, good luck. We look forward to getting applications.
Yes, awesome. Good luck.
Thank you. Good luck.
Take care, everyone, and email us if you have any other questions. Have a good afternoon.